Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Good morning and welcome. I'm Joe Donahue, along with WAMC's Alan Chartok, WAMC's Ray Graff, and WAMC. Oh, yeah, right.
No.
Mike Spain, associate editor of the Times Union. The man nice enough to return my calls.
Yeah, one of the few, eh? Yeah,
well, Mike done. Spain, associate editor of the Times Union, is here. Mike, we missed you last week, and I know you were out and about, and hope you had a lovely time.
Oh, yeah. Went west, went to California, Oregon, and Colorado on family Ooh. Visits. So it's good to be back.
Excellent. So let's talk news. We had Judith Enkin yesterday on our panel talking about dredging, and that's the top story of the paper today.
Oh yes, it's a big story. I heard a good report you just had on the news, but it's about halfway through this massive dredging project. Of course, it was brokered back in 2002 between the Environmental Protection Agency and the General Electric Company, and it involves the removal of these contaminants in the riverbed. They're PCBs, polychlorinated biphenyls, and they were part of a manufacturing process. They're used as insulators and capacitors, and GE produced those capacitors back in the 60s and 70s. Up in Fort Edward and discharged their waste into the river. Now, that was not against the law at the time. However, the way that environmental laws work, if you are held responsible for pollution that you are responsible for, even if the law did not prohibit that pollution at the time. So GE had fought this dredging project, as everyone knows. They had commercials and they had a campaign saying that it might be better to allow the sediment to cover over the PCBs, and that would be better than stirring them all up. But ultimately, they did agree to fund about $1 billion cleanup, and it's been going on for 4 years, and it looks like it probably, according to the EPA administrator for this region, Judith Enk, probably go on until about 2016. So Brian Nearing, our environment writer, has a report today that talks about a couple of unanswered questions that relate to this project. One is involving a lawsuit filed this week by GE against National Grid. National Grid is the company that took over Niagara Mohawk. And GE contends that the pollution wouldn't be as bad if Niagara Mohawk had not removed a dam, an old 1880s dam in Fort Edward back in the 1973 era. And that allowed a whole lot more PCBs to flow downriver and made the problem worse. And they're going after National Grid to try to recover some of the cost of the cleanup. Of course, National Grid says that they'll have to pass it on to their consumers, and that the EPA clearly found GE responsible and they don't intend to pay. So that'll be a lawsuit. That's not new. I mean, they've been sort of fighting about what role, if any, the utility company would have because of their removal of that dam that allowed all the sediment to go down river. But while that's being debated, there's also a separate issue, and that involves a canal, the Champlain Canal, which is not part of the official cleanup. And the Champlain Canal runs 60 miles from Whitehall near the tip of Lake Champlain, South Bay, all the way to Fort Edward, where it joins the Hudson River, and it's part of the whole lock system. And it cannot be used for commercial traffic now because there's so much sediment in it. And ordinarily, the State Canal Corps would come in and dredge the canal and keep the traffic flowing. That's part of their responsibility. But this canal has PCBs in it, and it will cost about $180 million to clean it up. So the Canal Corp has committed to spending that $180 million, but they don't have $180 million. Then it gets into politics, and who's going to pay for it? And GE says, we're not responsible. That wasn't part of the deal. So everybody is looking for ways to fund that to keep that canal open as a channel for commercial traffic.
Now, it does seem when Judith was here yesterday, Judith Enk, she was saying that, part of the rationale is that, by the way, I was fascinating that they didn't oversee that. So once that sediment, if it were to move into the river, then they take over.
Right.
But until that, as long as it stays in the canal,
it's a state's responsibility.
It's a state's responsibility.
Right.
So the controller came out, Thomas DiNapoli came out and said, we need to do something about this. And GE said, well, we'll work with you and we'll see. We don't think it needs to be done, but we'll see. And the only thing Judah Thing said yesterday about it, which I thought was interesting, is if you have the stuff already up there, if you have the equipment.
You're in the neighborhood.
If you're in the neighborhood and the project is already $1 billion.
What's $180 million, right?
Right. You know, you take care of the problem because then, of course, the concern is then it moves right back into where you've already.
Right. And you've undone all the value that you've added back to the river by cleaning it up. Yeah. And you know, this is. You know, like we said, this was going on since the 80s and the 90s. I mean, you know, the whole reason that back in the 70s, commercial fishing was limited in the Hudson River and the bass, you know, striped bass fishery was kind of put out of business. Commercial fishing was put out of business was because PCBs get into the fish, and if you consume the fish and the eel, you'll be risking health, you know, your health, and, you know, they warn fishermen today that they should really limit how much fish they eat out of the Hudson River. And this is a way to, they call it the biggest river remediation, you know, pollution cleanup in the country. You know, it's to restore the river to what it once was, a great place for food and recreation and livelihood. So, you know, it'll be continued to be debated. I don't think it'll be resolved instantly, but you have GE going after National Grid. You have various people discussing how to do the canal, which is not part of the river, and you know, we're all watching it.
And how many? I mean, of the three of you guys, if you hear that you should watch how much fish you eat, and how many fish you eat who may be contaminated, because you know you get contaminated. Who would have the first fish? I mean, would you have the first?
You know, you can actually go to the state health department.
Is that philosophical?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not philosophical.
Oh, right over my head.
You should have the first fish.
Well, you got to be out of your mind.
Well, they say an adult male can consume one or two servings a month or less, and that would be okay. But
well, this is like
woman,
when they say the acceptable, there's an acceptable amount of cyanide that you can
right.
have. You know,
right.
But you don't necessarily want to ingest any of it.
Or vitamin D or anything like that.
Yeah. Oh, cut it out, Ray.
Yeah. You know.
That's a whole nother discussion.
But yes,
I mean, there are risks, and it was determined that the risk was great enough that there needed to be this remediation that, you know, was debated heavily. Remember the TV ads and the full-page ads about whether the dredging needed to happen. And this is an effort to, you know, do this for future generations. It's not going to be cleaned up instantly.
And by the way, it doesn't stop in New York State. We have the same problems in Massachusetts, Western Massachusetts, and those have to be remediated too.
And one thing Judith was saying was that this is now a model. I mean, what's going on
absolutely.
In the Hudson is worldwide. They say, "Oh, this is how you're going to do it. This is going to work."
Right. Not only that, but once GE conceded here, then it's going to be very hard to concede in every other site.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break. We'll talk about some other issues when we come back. We would love your input, as always. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Mike Spain is here. Ray Graff, Alan Chartok. I'm Joe Donahue. You will continue after the short break. Welcome back to the program. I feel like we should take another break. Alan and I have some stuff to decide here.
Oh, if we could only have the mics open for things like that. That was great.
Oh, that is good.
Good to have Alan back.
All right. We'll discuss this in 9 minutes.
I was just talking about yachting on the Miami Bay.
Yes.
Nobody seems to care.
Well, it was a directly related to the question as to why do they need to dredge the canal. And of course, it needs to be deeper than it's 3 feet at some levels, and that's not enough to support commercial dredging.
But before we go forward, and I know Joe is anxious to do that, have you guys ever heard of a thing, something called Stiltsville?
What?
Stiltsville.
I haven't.
Okay, in the Miami Bay, things are so shallow in some places that there are a number of homes built on stilts in the middle of the bay. And how would you like to be there during the next hurricane?
Wow. No, I didn't know.
Not I.
No, you didn't know that?
No.
Okay.
Joe, can you add anything to this?
No, I have no idea.
Okay.
No. We are going to move forward real quick because I want to hear the story about your front page on a sexual harassment case involving a former jail guard. And this is in Rensselaer County. Tell us what's happening.
Well, it's a decision that was handed down by the State Division of Human Rights involving a case of a woman who was a jail guard at Rensselaer County Jail. And according to our story today by Brendan Lyons, a state administrative law judge has found that the jail's leaders engaged in deliberate inaction that was wanton, willful, and malicious. And in this decision...
Inaction after, in what?
Well, basically, they were harassing this woman, Laura Abbott Seabury, and they were doing it in a systematic way, according to the finding of the civil rights panel. And they, eventually forced her out of her job. She filed a suit. They have now said that she should receive $2 million in damages and have all of her back pay restored and all her pension credits restored. And it all relates to just an old boys club is the way they described it. And they were physically and verbally abusing her and making fun of her. Uh-huh. And she had an exemplary record. But it's going to cost the Rensselaer County taxpayers quite a bit. They do have 10 days to file a objection, but it looks like an enormously solid case against them. And, it's a big story. And, we're following what they do next. But essentially she had complained. And her boss, who was sympathetic at the jail, had pretty much said, you should just toughen up and just take it, rather than mitigating it and telling...
This is classic, of course.
Of course,
every time this happens in a police
harassment
department anywhere
case,
else, right?
Right. It's an environment that's tough. So it's going to cost county taxpayers, and it should be a warning to other institutions that it cannot be tolerated.
It does seem that as details of the story come out, though, it gets kind of more unfortunate and kind of seedier as time goes on.
Yeah, the details, some of which are not suitable for on the air, talk about how they physically abused her and how they had names for her, some that can't be repeated here, and they made fun of her. And it caused, and they also did, harass some other female employees too. And it probably has a lot to do with the culture of, some institutions like jails, which were only integrated in recent years. And this probably will...
When you say integrated, you mean men and women.
Yes, that's what I mean, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, don't they have an insurance? You say it's going to cost the taxpayers money, but isn't there insurance for this sort of thing?
Well, ordinarily, those come from bonds that they have to float to pay these. Mm-hmm. So it's... I don't know the answer in this case.
I think
case,
the answer is probably, although I probably don't know it either, is that state government and other governments self-insure.
Mm. Right, self-insure. So it comes out, if they don't have it, they'll have to raise taxes or float a bond or something like that. But it's a pretty significant case that's been going on for a long time, and this is the resolution.
I do want to make mention of the fact that President Obama is holding a press conference at the White House this morning at 10:15. We will be covering that live from National Public Radio. He is likely to take questions on the conflict in Syria, the investigation into the Boston bombings, as well as federal budget cuts. The press conference comes as a host of national and international issues have weighed on the presidency, facing pressure from some lawmakers to step up the U.S. role in Syria's bloody conflict amid alleged chemical weapons use by the regime there. Administration also facing questions about whether intelligence agencies missed opportunities to prevent the Boston Marathon bombing. So a lot going on, and it's one of those things that seems like we're in the middle of it and you don't know how much... We're going to forward the story here, but it'll be fascinating.
So he's not specifically talking about Syria? So we don't know exactly what he's going to say.
It'll be a press conference. I assume he will come out and talk about the three issues that I mentioned, both federal budget cuts, Boston bombings, and Syria, and then we'll take questions on what are the other issues.
And one of the interesting things about the way press conferences go these days is that the president knows who he's going to call on, and who is going to ask what question. So, to a large degree, they do know that.
Do they figure that out, or is that brokered ahead of time?
I mean, well, that is an interesting question, but I think it's true.
What's true? That they broker it?
No, that they know what's going to be, what people are interested in asking. Because when they say, here, let's say Thomas Kaplan of the New York Times, somebody knows what's up.
And they know, and I think some of that was done for, I'm sure, obviously there are other reasons, but some of that was done for repetition. Repetition and the same people being called on, and repetition within the questions within the press conference?
Well, no, I remember the day that I was watching, I was astounded that George Bush got very confused. George Bush II got very confused, didn't know. He said, and he's looking at this thing and he says, the map is all fouled up.
Yeah.
They weren't sitting where
Tony isn't over there and Margaret isn't there.
Right. He said, my map, I'm confused by my map. And then we all knew that this was anything but just.
Knowing where the people sit is not a crime, right?
Well, he'll look down and he'll say.
Well, it is a crime, actually.
It is.
You didn't know about Penal Section 42-77?
But the idea is that by calling on different types of media and different reporters who have different interests, he's able to predict what the question will be about and be prepared for that. And
that's the best interpretation.
He's accused of avoiding traditional media and some of the tough journalists and going to some social media reporters and just moving around and being non-traditional, and that has been somewhat difficult for some of the regulars in the White House press corps.
I was fascinated. We only have like 2 minutes, which is just enough time to cover what I want to cover here. I was fascinated by when he made a statement during the Boston bombing situation, and he came out and made a statement, and he did it in the White House press room, and it was clear that they said nobody ask any questions. But when they always do those things in the Rose Garden, when he leaves, everybody starts bombarding him with
questions.
Yeah, they
keep walking.
Right, and then you just keep walking. I was fascinated because nobody said a peep, and I was wondering what they said to the press to keep him shut up, because he just came out.
You'll never get the law of anticipated reaction doesn't mean they have to say anything. We tell you to shut up. You don't shut up, you'll never get a question answered for the rest of your life.
Well, that'll do it.
I guess they're disciplined about their maintaining of those.
Well, policies. And I was almost wondering, because of the severity of the issue, and because you wonder whether there was sort of a decorum.
I see what you mean. You know, when it's more, when it's a hotter political time, people.
You know,
are a little,
budgets are one thing, right. But this is
sequestration.
Perhaps,
this was
absolutely.
This was a nation under crisis.
We are going to take a break. We are going to hear the latest news again. We'll be bringing you the press conference from the president at 10:15. This morning, and when we come back, we will have other juicy, good topics to talk about. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to The Roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue, along with Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, and Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain. We would love your input, as we say in the States.
It sounds more like a peach. Yep.
Yes. On any of the stories that we're talking about, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. WAMC Roundtable.
Shouldn't we make Mike executive editor again? Isn't it about that time of the show?
No, I already did that during the opening.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
oh,
no, he had it. He had his moment.
Promoted and demoted all
He had
in
his
one
moment. And then
it was nice for a moment.
Sarah came in and corrected me again for the umpteenth time.
Right.
So let's talk about the Jason Collins story. It's on the front page of most newspapers, including the Albany Times Union this morning. Jason Collins says he has gotten incredible support since coming out as the first openly gay player in one of the four major U.S. pro sports leagues, and hopes that he may have made the path easier for others to follow. He sat down in an interview this morning with ABC's Good Morning America, one day after the NBA Center revealed his sexuality in a first-person story posted on Sports Illustrated's website. He said, quote, "I think I know in my personal life I'm ready, and I think the country is ready for supporting an openly gay basketball player." He said, "I hope that every player makes a decision that leads to their own happiness, whatever happiness that is in life. I know that I, right now, am the happiest I've ever been in my life. He said he went through something akin to a 12-step program when deciding to come out, dealing with emotions such as anger and denial, but ultimately said that the support that he has been given from both fans and fellow players and the nation in tweets and Facebook posts has been, he says, quote, incredible. A lot of issues to talk about in the story. Let us begin with Mike Spain, who has there are many local ties here.
Right. Jason Collins' father grew up in Troy in the Capital Region.
Oh, really?
Jason Collins and his brother, his twin brother Jaron, also a basketball player, have spent parts of their childhood and summers in Troy visiting grandparents and they have relatives there, and then they've come back every summer to run a basketball camp. And our reporter Brian Fitzgerald talked to the former mayor Harry Tutungian, who said he was proud to call Collins a friend, and he said it was big news, you know, that Collins had come out, and hopefully he's opening the door for others. So he's getting a lot of support. We talked to some others in Troy, you know, at the high school and at the Boys and Girls Club, and they've said that they've just, he's terrific. He has a great demeanor with kids. He's a good role model, and they were all really supporting him. So that's interesting. Even President Obama, called him yesterday to offer some support. So what's going on nationally, this kind of support that Collins is getting is echoed locally. He's got a lot of local support and connections, and that's pretty interesting. It'll be interesting to see if any others follow in his footsteps now.
It seemed about maybe 9 months ago when during the NFL season there were some questions, and some NFL players came out and said supporting gay marriage and said, you know, it was essential for sports to have someone to break down this barrier. And I think it's so you wonder what kind of personal pressure that put on gay athletes to say, you know, should I be the one to do this? And if anything, I mean, to be the first of anything to come out and to say, to be openly gay and say, this is who I am, and I'm proud of it. It does seem as if sports was the last frontier.
Right. A few professional sports, athletes have come out after their retirement.
Right.
You know, and
so you have an active player. I mean,
this is really a first.
Yeah. He is 34 years old, and
he's a free agent.
Right. So
so his future is not certain.
Yeah. And he certainly has a lot of publicity now, so I'm sure he will get some offers.
Well, yes. Well, John Amici, another NBA player who's retired now, who had come out and announced that he is gay, said that you really won't know. The test of this is whether Collins is on a roster next season.
Now, is he?
I don't think that's true. I mean,
his assertion.
I know, I get it. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's so. I mean, I think the test of it is he did it. You know, Jackie Robinson came out. Think about this. Somebody's going, oh, well, that's different. But he was the person.
Jackie Robinson came out?
The first one who wrote the color. But
oh, I see.
You saw it right from the beginning, Ray, but you had to go.
Well,
I didn't know, mess me up.
Fine.
Well,
okay.
It is being compared to Jackie Robinson's breaking the race barrier.
And the timing of the movie and this is interesting.
Well, maybe there'll be a movie, but anyway.
No. I mean, the 42 is out now, right?
Yes.
Right.
So it brought that whole story back to the consciousness.
And his number is?
34? I don't know.
No.
He took the number.
Remember, he took the number from a martyred guy who Matthew. Come on, help me
I
here.
I have
Matthew.
No idea what you're talking
this
about.
Is, yeah.
What are we talking
Jackson's
about?
Number.
His number.
Whose number?
Whose number?
Jason's number.
Jason Collins.
Oh, yeah, we're back to that.
Yeah, it's 31, right?
No, it isn't. Somebody's going to write in right now and get me off the hook.
All right, what's the point?
Okay. All right, let's go.
Okay.
All right. What do you make of this? but what was your story?
Whose?
Yours. Well, I'm just trying to get to the point.
Of what?
Of what his
You only
number.
Have 19 minutes his, left.
He
so,
wore number 98
90,
for the Celtics.
Number 98.
And the Wizards and in know, honor of Matthew Shepard,
exactly.
a gay University of Wyoming
Thank
student who was
God
killed in 1998.
Yeah, okay. That's right.
There okay. you go.
I knew
According
a little bit.
To today's New York Times.
Ah,
but not a lot.
I see.
Okay.
So Alan read the New York Times, but not the Times Union tonight. Well, is that what you're saying?
We're all reading...
No, actually,
stuff.
I heard it on NPR.
Ah!
We're all reading the good stuff, Mike yeah. says. Yes. how true.
And some of us have, you know, these things, electronic things in front of us, and some of us don't.
Like what things?
The ones that Joe and, you know.
Oh, I see. Sit well, we're in the cheap seats over here.
Well, we could have. I have one. I just don't bring it in with me.
I know.
Well, you have a computer right in front of you.
I rely. It doesn't work.
You can have someone.
Is that true?
No, no.
Yeah.
Well, one of your
think,
people
you
could
think,
run it for you too. You could just
Jason
have him
Collins
in here.
Jason Collins' announcement yesterday will lead to other current professional athletes in the big sports, baseball,
Mike,
football.
Do you Mike, think? It's very important. It's very important. Go back a few years. You found the first person playing basketball, as I remember it, who had some AIDS. Right? Wasn't that
That's
true?
Right? Magic
HIV?
Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there was a big
Magic
fuss.
Magic Johnson. Yeah.
That's right. A big fuss about that. What are you laughing about?
No, I'm
because
going
to open the door. Names, right?
It's just the way you phrase it. He had some AIDS, like, you know.
Some HIV, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It seemed, and I'm also in the on the timing of that. Was that post, or was he playing? You know, he was actively playing.
No, he was playing?
He?
Oh, yeah, he continued he to play, and then it was awkward. Some people were worried about
yeah,
what happened.
Question, yeah, and all
You know,
that.
It's really a little weird when you yeah. look back at it.
When you think about the answering your question directly, Mike, of will this open doors, and of course you hope so. What we've learned from other high profile announcements such as this that they come slowly and over a period of time, and it becomes more and more accepted, and then that opens the door wider, and things happen, and we'll see it in one sport and then hopefully another, and it'll start to become, but what I find to be, yes, go ahead.
No, well, I just hope it gets to the point soon where it doesn't matter, because when I watch sports, I could not possibly care less what the players do in their spare time and when they go to bed. I watch sports to watch sports. When I watch David Wright, I'm not concerned about, oh, gosh, what's he doing with his wife? I'm worried about how does he hit with runners on second and third and two outs. This is what sports is about. I hope we get to the point where this does not matter.
Go ahead, Alan.
I was just going to say, but it does matter right now.
Yeah, well, I guess it does.
Well, I think it matters in what we've seen in the gay rights movement overall and compared to other civil rights movements is how quickly this has has moved forward and what strides the gay community has made. And so with that in mind, you look at this announcement and think, well, yeah, you know, you hope that it will be followed soon and quickly and get to a point where fans and advertisers and franchises,
endorsers
are the same. I have the same mindset that Ray has, which is I don't care. I just want to make sure that they're the best.
Right.
The best player.
And the
in that
fear
team.
Is that for a while people will be watching. Is that the gay guy playing? You know, and really that needs to go away, and it just needs to be, you know. And the way that it will happen is other people
and no. gay marriage is very important here because it opened all of the next stages up, including this. So in other words, there was a green light that was given at that point that this is now something that we all as Americans can accept.
So this is a significant step forward
yes.
in
I think it'll be interesting to see
acceptance.
If he gets another job and if it takes him a while and then it opens up a whole nother discussion.
Yeah, unfortunately,
whole nother
he
is
was
not,
on waivers.
Sort of language you know, pet
whole nother is fine.
No, it was a language pet peeve from the other day.
No,
it's
but it'll
a
get
whole
into
other
the dictionary
discussion.
Soon, and then you'll be all right.
Yeah, but that'll be the interesting question, I think.
We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the primary in Massachusetts. As we mentioned, the President of the United States will have a press conference at 10:15 this morning. We're going to go to NPR coverage beginning at 10, and then we will cover that that event live at 10:15 as well. In the meantime, we welcome your thoughts. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue along with Ray Graff, Alan Chartok, and Mike Spain, the associate editor of the Times Union. And while we are talking about many different issues this morning, we can certainly not lose sight of the fact that there is a primary going on in the state of Massachusetts. In the Bay State, Democrats are choosing between ultimately who will replace John Kerry in the Senate. And it will, it's, I don't know, the polling is not close, right?
No.
So it's Ed Markey.
Markey.
Yes. And Lynch.
Schultz.
Peter Lynch. Oh, or Lynch. I apologize. Stephen Lynch, yes, former Iron Worker who took office in 2001.
And was considered to be the more conservative candidate, the more middle-of-the-road candidate. Markey is considered to be more liberal.
It's been kind of an ugly campaign lately, too.
Well, in the last week and a half.
And, you know, these are very unattended, very low turnout things. So if you can get just, you know, 5%, 10% can win the whole thing. And that means if you're really concerned about it, this is probably more important in the Republican primary. You know something about that, don't you, Ray?
I beg your pardon?
Don't you know something about the Republican
primary? I know about primaries.
Because you're a newsman.
I know a lot about this stuff, and I choose not to share it with you and just carry on. That's all. If you want to cause trouble, you go right ahead. Well, go back to Miami and go on your yacht.
There's this guy Gomez, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, Gabriel Gomez.
And then Mike Spain probably could tell us a little bit more.
That's in the GOP primary.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. And then a U.S.
So
attorney.
You have Michael Sullivan, a U.S. attorney.
Now, see, I think Sullivan's the guy to watch.
And Daniel Winslow is a legal counsel.
The reason I think Sullivan is the guy to watch is because Massachusetts politics, like New York politics, can sometimes be very corrupt. So there may be a sense that if you choose the U.S. attorney, he's going to clean things up, since we all know that the federal government is the one who does this kind of prosecuting. Right. So therefore, I think he becomes a very attractive person. Now, in Massachusetts, we're allowed to cross over, Joe. In other words, if you're an unenrolled voter, you walk in, as I will this afternoon, and you say, give me a Republican ballot or give me a Democratic ballot.
So if you don't have a party affiliation, you're allowed to do it.
You have to be, quote, unenrolled.
I see.
And then as soon as you walk out, you're automatically unenrolled again, even though you're a Democrat or a Republican for the few seconds that you voted.
Interesting.
Well, Gomez could be part of that new movement in the Republican Party to appeal to Hispanics, which they desperately need to do if they're going to win any national elections.
That's a good point, Mike.
He's the son of Colombian immigrants, and he was a Navy pilot, and he has an MBA from Harvard, and now he's a U.S. attorney, so he's a great candidate. If he does somehow pull this off and beats Markey, who's favored to win the Democratic side, he'll probably be a star in the Republican Party.
That's right.
When you think about this primary, it seems as though the big news really came early in not who is running but who did not run.
That's right. You want to talk about that?
Well, Scott Brown.
Right.
That's right.
The one who lost the seat to Elizabeth Warren.
And nobody really knows why he done it. Good. Next Friday, you can quote me on that.
Well, because, I think it's because if he loses, then he's cooked. He's already lost. If he loses again in short order, then he has no future prospects. Right now, the future is open.
And a lot of people think that he's going to run for governor when Deval Patrick is done. And the reason that, Massachusetts people tend to vote for governors who can be Republican to clean up the Democratic messes. They're averse to helping to organize the Senate for the Republicans, if you're following me. They're sophisticated enough to know that Mitch McConnell is not the guy they want as their leader. No?
After that moment of silence, we will, yes. Did anybody want to add into that?
Why are you looking at me?
Okay.
Because you're sagacious. You may be the smartest among us. That's why we look at you.
I think that's
you.
True, but I think it's time to take a break, right?
No.
No?
Okay. Let me ask this question about something. I had two people write in and ask this question because they knew Mike was going to be on, because we teased it yesterday. And in just a few minutes, we're going to be going over to NBR coverage of the president. So new movie that is out. It's the new Robert Redford film. It's starring Robert Redford. It's directed by Robert Redford, and it's called The Company You Keep. It is on area screens. It takes place in Albany.
No way.
Well, it was filmed in Vancouver.
It was filmed in but the story
right.
takes
the story place. Line is Albany, and Albany. He works for a mythical paper called the Albany Times.
Now, right. So not a great portrayal of that news entity in the movie. And the question was what did you all think about about that?
When we first heard that Robert Redford was doing a movie and it was involving, and he was going to be in the movie and it was involving a newspaper in Albany, we all wondered who Robert Redford would portray from our newsroom.
Is obviously it, Rex.
Right.
I mean,
Well, that was some speculation by some people. I'd like to think that, you know, Brendan Lyons might have been Shia LaBeouf, played by Shia LaBeouf. But, you know, we played those games. But actually, we didn't have any role in the movie, and it was filmed in Canada. But it is an opportunity lost. We had a couple of stories mentioned how, you know, Place Beyond the Pines was filmed entirely in Schenectady, about Schenectady, and was a big boost to the economy, and it will elevate the stature of Schenectady across the country. A lot of people who don't know much about it will know a lot about it now. And who knows, it may even be a cult following where people will be coming to Schenectady to go to the banks that were robbed in the movie or to see the ice cream place, et cetera, et cetera. But Albany didn't hang out the welcome mat for this movie, as far as we know. There's a few references to Albany businesses in it, and it's too bad. It would have been great to have them here filming it. We've been the host of other films.
Yeah, but what about the newspaper?
Yeah.
I mean, that was the question.
Yeah.
Were you embarrassed about it?
Not at all.
You
know, it's
we will add that the paper panned the film.
conflict of interest.
We see.
I would like to say that has nothing to do for the fact that they did not use our name
and
in that
by
newspaper.
By the way, you were certainly not the only ones to pan the film. I will add that.
Okay.
You were not.
It was clearly based on the Knickerbocker
News.
There
was a live chorus of people.
Well, who was the editor then?
Back in
the old Knickerbocker.
Well, was it based? I mean, was it a reference to the Times Union or the Knickerbocker News? If this was in the 70s, it was a fellow named Bob Fitchenberg, the late Bob Fitchenberg, a great editor at the Knickerbocker News, the great afternoon daily, which closed 25 years ago this month.
That you worked for.
I did.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great newspaper.
Who played Harry Rosen in the film?
Well, that's.
Who played Harry Rosen?
None of those people were portrayed.
All right, fine. Well, the other curious thing that you talked about Albany putting out the welcome mat, but Robert Redford, who directed the film as I mentioned and stars in it, has done two or three projects here. The Way We Were was done in this region. Mm-hmm. The Horse Whisperer was done in this region.
Yeah.
So there was some precedent even in his filmmaking that he would come to this region.
That's right. You know, we missed an opportunity. Maybe he spent enough time here and decided.
Maybe he wanted to spare us.
Yeah.
Maybe he didn't want to disparage us and to just let the Canadians take the fall.
Maybe he's heard the show. I mean, you know, there's a lot of reasons he could maybe avoid the area.
Yeah, maybe it's your fault.
Yeah, you know.
It is too bad. It would have been a lot of fun. It's great when a movie is made here.
And I guess I'm curious as to, because we got those comments, have you been getting any of those?
Oh, yeah. You know, people have asked. And we've even had a few stories about it ourselves, where a couple of folks who write for us, C.J. Leis, wrote a column and Christy Barletti wrote columns saying that it would have been just really nice if we were celebrating the same thing in Albany that Schenectady is celebrating. And they are. They're celebrating. They're the star of this new movie.
Have you talked about or editorialized that given the plot points without giving those away in the film? But if your newspaper was faced with the same dilemmas that were portrayed in the film, of how you would respond to them?
I can honestly say I haven't been involved in any discussions.
Well, there would be people, Joe, who have no idea what you're talking about. What right. Just give us a hint as to the
dilemma.
There
were some questions about ethical behavior by Shia LaBeouf's character.
Well, as I said, as you know, Alan, all too well,
yes.
You get in trouble when you give away
plots.
Okay.
So we need
spoiler alert.
Yeah, so it is.
Close your ears if you don't want to hear this. Go ahead, Joe.
It tells the story of a former weather underground activist in the 70s who goes on the run from robbery and murder
and changes
his identity, remaking himself as a lawyer in the Albany area. Yeah. And all goes well until another former Weather Underground member comes to town and is arrested. And then soon the man hiding in plain sight is being pursued by Shia LaBeouf, who is this reporter for the
the Albany Times.
Aha!
And have you ever interviewed the person that this is based on here on this radio station?
Yes.
Yes, you have.
Is this a true crime story?
The character was a weather underground activist in the 70s.
Sure.
And
President Obama, I believe, got into some trouble for having had something to do with this particular fella somewhere in his history.
Interesting.
Pretty sure I'm right.
Yeah, so I don't, he's the guy in the 98 jersey.
That'll be on the press conference in 3 minutes then. Fine.
That's all right. Gentlemen, thank you very much for the conversation this morning. We would love your input as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or by tweeting us at WAMC Roundtable. Mike Spain is the associate editor of the Times Union. You can find out more at timesunion.com. Mike, it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much with us. Ray Graff, Alan Chartok, thank you very much. Coming up next, NPR coverage of the President's News Conference from Washington. And then we'll be back with the remainder of the program, although we don't know how much of that it will be, but we'll see how long the President goes. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.